equipment, afraid. So I've turned the air conditioning down, keep everyone on their toes. So deck three covers strategy. As we talked earlier, we are proposing a structured approach to the description of strategy, and the concern there is that if we don't provide some form of structure, we'll get very vague descriptions of long-term aspects of strategy that don't necessarily connect with what the business is doing in the more immediate term. So we put a lot of emphasis on trying to build up a structure that starts from the purpose or mission, works through the sort of mid-term objectives for the business, and placing a particular emphasis on the importance of resources and relationships often in achieving those objectives. And then coming down into the detail of plans. We thought long and hard about the right term to use there. We're concerned that plans might convey more detail than we're actually seeking to provide here. We're looking for something that provides an overview with additional detail rather than the detailed blueprints for how the business is moving forward. So it's important that that comes across in our drafting, and if it doesn't, we need to know. And those plans, we make a link both to the entity's strategy, the strategic objectives, but also, there may be a feature in the operating environment that it doesn't have a well-developed strategy for, so we recognise that we still need to have a discussion on that. So the sort of reactive discussion to what's in the operating environment, as well as the sort of longer-term joined-up thinking of strategy to support purpose. We felt that it was helpful to provide additional guidance around what we required on plans for the reasons I was just mentioning. So we ask for we put an emphasis on what will change, both positive and negative, and on the resources and relationships that are needed to support those plans and to support the development of the business. We also ask for a discussion around both the CapEx and the OpEx investment requirement, not specifying quantification, but a discussion in that area. And a discussion around how the business is monitoring its execution of those plans, and then onto a link into the discussion of progress that we covered in stream two. We pick up, as we said earlier, also on culture, and as a number of people have said, the concern here is to get beyond the "we have a great culture." Our route for doing that is to link culture and purpose together, but question whether that is the best route. We'd be welcome suggestions there about any ideas for putting more substance around that discussion of culture. You will also see on page 15 a discussion of funding strategy, and we've already heard a suggestion that should be funding and liquidity strategy. There are some similarities with that discussion and the viability reporting requirements in the UK, which probably push this area the furthest forwards. I think I should highlight the areas where we're different, where we stopped short of the UK requirement. So we're not asking for quantification of risk to funding. We're not asking for a look-ahead period or a conclusion as to whether the funding is sufficient, and we're not asking for stress testing, though, of course, we did talk in stream two about the provision of sensitivity-type information. So There's provision to support that if the entity is doing it, but we're not proposing to require it. The discussion is more rooted in the ability of the entity to execute its strategy without compromising either its credit policy, its leverage ratios, and its dividend policy. So we think the emphasis should be on the ability to execute the strategy without compromising those factors. And then lastly, we highlight remuneration as an area where we expect to see a link between strategy and remuneration disclosures. And again, the proposal is not to duplicate the typically nationally set remuneration disclosures, but more to make the link between and what's in those disclosures. We talked about tax strategy last time, and we've had a number of discussions since, so we're not proposing to cover that today. So, although I think we've given you four diverse questions, I think in the interest of time it would be good to take those in a single run round. So we have questions for you on page 18 around whether we have the components of strategy right, around our approach of linking culture to purpose, our proposals regarding funding strategy, and then whether there's anything we're missing at other aspects of strategy, including the approach we have to link between strategy and remuneration. So I think it's a good point to opening it up for comments now. Lisa.
Okay. So I'm going to answer two of these questions, the ones that resonate most strongly with me. I do think that you are smart to pin the time frames, short, medium, and long term, to distinct phases of the organization's planning cycle. So integrated reporting, or the integrated reporting framework, it does call for disclosures on short, medium, and long term. But I know that report preparers struggle with what does that mean. And the fact that you are kind of structuring it along the lines that you are gives that clarity, I think, and hope. So you've effectively taken a time-based definition and made it task-based, and I think that's going to be very helpful. If companies aren't already thinking along those lines in terms of planning, objectives, purpose, or whatever terminology you choose, so you're not only encouraging better disclosures, but you are also encouraging that thinking internally to happen, particularly amongst smaller entities. So structurally, I agree with the approach. Where I do struggle, again, is on the labels, you know, so I won't belabor the purpose value creation point, but that's where I guess my sticking points would be. And then the second point is on the culture issue. I had the same concern that I've heard quite a few times today in terms of the likelihood of getting boilerplate and spin. In terms of how it's positioned, you know, is it linked to purpose? It is important to purpose, but so too are many other attributes of a business. Personally, I see it as an input to the business model. If in fact it is truly a distinctive culture, you know, if you're in a high-tech firm where innovation is absolutely essential, then yes, that's going to be baked into your description of the business model. So I don't really have some advice on where to put it. That's just the way that I see it. I don't necessarily see culture as being any more important than some of these other factors.
Alessandro?
I have similar concerns with respect to the culture. I think it is useful to, for example, refer to the values, because values is, although it might be very high level as a statement, but at least it points to elements that are it's clear what they are. It's a statement from the entity of what it believes in. Then it's a different question whether those values permeate into the actual behaviors of the company, which I don't think you can necessarily disclose in a way that doesn't get to an overly optimistic view of how well you are performing, how great you are. So I struggle a bit with the idea of disclosing something that is really inherent in the daily operations and the behavior of the way employees treat each other or they treat their customers. It's easier perhaps to disclose a net promoter score, which as a proxy of how well you treat your customers, for example, rather than saying our culture is to treat customers fairly, because that's really very difficult to some extent to substantiate. I also had one comment on, well, it was interesting in slide 8 that you pick the, I think it's the Japanese Institute of CPAs, that refers to the public interest, so creating values for the society at large, which I think links back to our previous discussion, and that perhaps is useful to keep in mind that in other standard setters, perhaps other than Europe, there is this orientation to other stakeholders. One additional point on the slide 10, when you talk about the purpose, I think what's useful and interesting perhaps is to see the changes over time of how the company changes its strategy and what are the impacts on a dynamic basis of changes in strategy, because I was wondering how you plan to cope with the situation in which there is new senior management that enters the company and decides to go for a different strategy than the one disclosed in the previous management commentary. How does this get reflected in the management commentary? Because arguably the organization is not fully flexible that immediately moves to the new strategy in its entirety, just because there is a statement from the senior management to say, today we're taking a totally different direction. So it would be interesting to see how the business model adjusts to the new strategy. And I don't know if this is captured in the drafting. And that is it for the moment.
Rodrigo. Just following on part of what Alessandro has mentioned, and I think Deepa also mentioned earlier, we see a lot of wording with respect to changes in strategy and not a lot of wording to the existing strategy, and it makes it seem like it's continually changing or it changes too fast or it's easy to change it fast. So I agree that it's... there should be some baseline on that.
Okay. Yeah. So sort of more emphasis on current strategy, but with some discussion of how it's evolved rather than the other way around.
Yeah. Exactly. And with respect to this baseline, one comment I made last meeting, and the use of the word predictions makes me a little bit concerned about the relationship between these predictions and IAS 36. From my point of view, I think they should be quite aligned. So I think this is something to be concerned about, and how to deal with the sometimes thin line between predictions and aspirations, and make sure that predictions don't become aspirations or not. So I think the aligning it with IAS 36 would be a way of making sure that predictions are predictions and aspirations are aspirations. That's my main point. Maybe using similar wording or making some kind of reference to the wording of IAS 36. And finally, one last point with respect to the time frame. I agree with Lisa that the idea of putting the different time buckets into concepts is quite interesting, but I still think at least some kind of soft wording about the time frame for each one of those could be added. I don't think it would be harmful for the statement to have some references to time frames, at least when it's supposed to be a more long-term view.
Yeah. Eliana?
Thank you. I, like everybody, I came back to the question number two and the relationship between the culture and the strategy. When I look at the whole package, I think that what can hinder or support a company strategy is not the culture. It's what we call the resources and relationship. And it's linked also with the risk analysis. What can hinder or can support a strategy is relating to a risk analysis at the end of the day. So I will take out the culture aspect because it's confusing, and I will insist on the elements of the business model. We'll come back to what is in the business model, what are the elements of the inputs, resource, relationship, process, or outflows and impact that could hinder support the strategy, put it in place, on what is the retroalimentation between both.
Yeah. Friend?
Just two quick comments. Ourselves, we have a third-party administered employee engagement survey done on an annual basis, which we refer to as the pulse check. And so we get a score, and it's scored against other people in our industry and internationally, and we disclose that. And that's an example of a culture measure. But I'm just wondering, maybe for Matt or others, what would good look like in terms of what metrics would you want to look at?
So I think when we proposed the inclusion of strategy of culture, we were thinking more in terms of narrative description, because the metrics of success would be picked up, for example, in a discussion of the maintenance of the business's resources and relationships, so that a staff satisfaction score would tell you information about the ability of the business to retain key staff, for example. So we felt we'd got that aspect covered by the stream two disclosures. And really what we had in mind with the culture request was a description of, I suppose, what are employees thinking about when they go to work? What's their number one priority?
How much are they engaged? Well, to use our terminology.
Yeah. But certainly we would anticipate that being a relevant measure somewhere in the management.
Simon? Someone said culture eats strategy for breakfast. So if it's true, culture is important, and therefore I think should find a place in the management commentary. Having said that, which of course is provocative, I see the concerns from the colleagues. But on the other hand, if we look at line 9, I think that the definition in A37 is quite good, because you are referring to values, attitudes, and behaviors. And as a matter of fact, this is a quite good definition. So you are providing, say, bold guidelines on this very delicate element. But on the other hand, in A37, you are also very concrete, and you are asking how the entity culture is monitored and managed. So you are very concrete in this 837. So my personal view is that this is important, and this should be stay in the in the in the management committee. Finally, slide 9, A28 is very important on the link to management compensation. This is what we're referring. I think this is very important to connect the compensation to the purpose, objective plans, and such.
Yeah, and I think we had comments earlier, perhaps, that suggested that A28 wasn't strong enough. So you feel it makes the link clearly enough?
To me, yes. And, you know, a link with the cross-reference. If you need more information on these two aspects, culture and link to management compensation, you can refer to other reports.
Yeah, just to reiterate on the culture point, to take the view about the risk on boilerplating, but from an investor point of view, it is really important. And so having something on that really is very helpful for us. In the UK particularly, there's a lot of discussion now as to the responsibility of boards to potentially measure and monitor this. So I know this is through the eyes of management, but there is this non-exec saying, oh, okay, we're sitting up here. We need to do something more. So it's definitely moving in that direction, because we understand that bad cultures, which are often easier to sniff out when you do see them, are destroying businesses. So we think that's important. As in the way of linking it only to purpose, is I do think you could link it to elements within business model or within subunits, as I sort of was mentioning earlier, because you could have a culture of, you know, innovation or, you know, learning from mistakes, continuous improvement, you know, in one aspect of your business, which is tied into, say, my purpose is improving human health. And that innovation is, well, R&D meets that purpose. We're going to constantly make quick decision making. That's, we've got a culture of quick decision making. Or to meet a purpose or a business model, it could be we're very interested in safety or patient safety or mechanella. So you'd have a slightly somewhat different expression of that culture, meeting either a purpose, improving human health, can still do it via safety or via innovation, but via your business model link, because that might be more in your manufacturing processes or your clinical trial protocols or something like that. So obviously both of those can link up to purpose, improving human health, but it might link more specifically to business model units. And actually there's an understanding amongst businesses that they, although they do find this hard to measure, they will often articulate different cultures or subcultures within their organizations, and then that actually goes across country, and they will talk about these and other things that are, we are weighing against a not invented here culture, but is more important in our innovation arm than it is important in our other arm. So those descriptions are important. I don't know whether we will necessarily get them all within management commentary, but then having it as a pointer mark starts that discussion off, often in a quite useful way. And then also having that for us on sort of the other side is then a useful cross-check for the board, because then there's at least an articulation for what we're meant to be looking for. And it can't just be, okay, there's a great culture. Okay, it's these four things, right? Well, let's think, do we think we have that? And then if we don't, then we can say, okay, there's a disconnect between what you've articulated and what we or the board or someone else can look at. So I would, even though I think, you know, and there's a lot of other bits within, and we talked about this within proxy and incentives, which are going down the boilerplate route anyway. So given that, I do think this could be an important part to keep.
So that would possibly take you to, in the description of the business model, highlighting the aspects of culture that are important to each part of the business.
Basically, yeah, and supports that. And it would be like if companies wanted to go down that route and they felt it was material to their business, which in some businesses it really would, or even highlighting that, you know, in our manufacturing arm, we have a culture of lean and no mistakes, but in our R&D function, we've got a culture of learning from continuous improvement, both of which support improving human health. That could be important articulations of that we could look for. I mean, and if they didn't feel this material, I mean, obviously that, but having some aspects like to allow them to do that.
Learning from mistakes, is that a culture?
Mm-hmm. Well, it would be a culture of continuous improvement would probably be how they...
I am very worried about this.
Okay.
But we have a very cultured...
Or growth mindset, you might describe it differently.
Rare someone defined me as a cultured person. Thank you. Take compliments when you can. But this is also on culture. I mean, the first sentence in 837, values, attitudes, behaviors. And we'll just tell you from experience, I think... just been around the space on time, tone at the top is everything.
Absolutely.
And that supersedes values, attitudes, behavior. Yeah. If you get the wrong tone at the top, I don't care what controls, governance, processes you've got, it doesn't work. And you can have a, but also tone at the top also means it's translated down to lowest organization levels, you know, and it can get more easily understood, I think, in stewardship or governance or internal controls and necessarily is translating to positive business action. But I think it's absolutely everything. If we're going to deal in this space, you have to start with that.
So, and putting your point with Ben's point, possibly then you have a tone at the top that is pushed down into the parts of the business.
Yeah, but it's not pushed down and no one knows what it is. It doesn't matter. It's tone at the top such that the people at the bottom can see the guy at the top wants.
I completely agree with Gary, but information about culture is, of course, most important where the culture is wrong. And those companies, and we all know which ones they are, and they're never going to write down our culture is to take every penny that we can from our customers. And there are lots of businesses.
I would say it's true for the bad ones, but also there's a class of companies which are...
charge the 20% underwriting fee for a bond that was used for corrupt purposes.
But there's definitely a place of average companies getting better. You know, I think there is a place for that, not just identifying the bad companies and cultural change. Can happen like that. And, you know, an example might be, for instance, Microsoft has gone through a cultural change and arguably has unleashed a huge amount of value, tone from the top, Satya Nadella, and there's a lot of, I mean, it's now a business case study, and we would say Microsoft was probably not a bad company beforehand, but seen through a variety of metrics, you would say it was a much better company that part. And you would say the cultural transformational element of that was very important. So, I mean, that's why I would say it's still important.
I think that probably permeates in many ways in the annual report rather than in a chapter. This is our culture.
Well, it ties into, I think, into governance, into management compensation, make your plan at all costs. You know, a decentralized environment without a lot of controls begets trouble at the lower levels. You know, that maybe it's more reputational risk as opposed to a material error. But, I mean, it all ties together.
Agreed.
Andreas. I'm absolutely in agreement with what Gary just said. Culture is important. That doesn't necessarily say that it does make sense to have a chapter or a section in the management commentary on it, especially not if it is merely restricted to narratives. Because if I take it one step further and say, well, how would we then go about verifiability and auditability? I mean, then there is a high risk of just having boilerplate and the audit of a boilerplate. Where I can see where it does make sense is actually when you do have metrics, as you were saying, Trent, then I could say that is verifiable. And if a company then wants to embark on it, go for it. Yeah, say culture for us means huge degree of employee satisfaction, and this is how we're monitoring it, and we're doing it that way. Go for it. That's fine. That's verifiable, and I think it adds value. But just a general requirement, I fail to see where it actually can have its place. Which made me smile, actually, on slide 18, was the question. I will just abbreviate that. We propose adding a requirement to provide a description of features of the entity's culture that hinder the achievement of the entity's purpose.
I don't see it coming.
That to me is mind-boggling because it seems to suggest that either the purpose is wrong or the culture is wrong. So, yeah. So I mean, what do we expect in terms of disclosures? So I had difficulty in that one.
Thank you.
So On to probably something that's more at hand on point three, description of the entity's funding strategy, including leverage credit rating objectives. Here, I think there is a point, again, on potential duplication of information, because in IAS 1, you do have capital requirements and capital disclosures that actually talk about the objectives and how you manage capital and things like that. So the question is, what's the relationship between the two? Is that a candidate for cross-referencing, or is this something where you could envisage actually taking this one out from IAS 1 and bringing it into here to have a holistic discussion about funding, liquidity management, and all sorts of things, which I would actually recommend. I just, again, urge you, if you take it out from the notes, it has an impact on auditability.
Yes, yeah, there's never any suggestion of removal from notes, and you know, to the extent there is useful information from the IS1 note, then management commentary would only ever build on that and replace it. But the the bit it management commentary brings the discussion of strategy in, which possibly then requires a richer discussion of funding.
I would actually suggest, encourage you to probably be a bit more brave, at least in your initial thinking, and think about a holistic discussion of any given topic. So in this case, it would be funding or capital management at large. I see why you want to retain probably the note disclosures in as per IAS 1, but I think would that not either lead to fragmentation of the discussion because you have part in the discussion in the notes and the rest really in the management commentary, or you have unavoidable or avoidable, as I would say, duplication. The same then goes on in the next stream with the risk disclosures. That part of that now sits in the notes, and the other part you propose to actually have here. So if you think about talking about something in a holistic way, then I would think, would urge you really to think about that and which parts actually do not necessarily need to be in the financial statements and the notes and which could be probably parked here.
Chris?
So just picking up on the culture point, I think certainly there's many different views about where and how it fits, but I would come back to the whole concept was to try and have information that was material in this management commentary, and I think culture is a bit like some of the other things that funding. For some entities, it's going to be material and it should be discussed in great detail, and for others, it's not going to be something that should be probably even discussed at all. So I think somehow we still have to get that concept in here that there are some of these things that are just going to be really critical and that will impact strategy, business model, relationships and resources, the whole kit and caboodle, and there's others that just isn't going to be there. And I just don't know that I would want to say specifically every single company or entity has to put something on culture in their management commentary. So then my second point on funding, subject to that same criteria, that I think, again, it has to be something that's critical for the entity, I don't quite understand why you would not want something about the statement of the period for which management is actually assessing its funding abilities. Because if this is through the eyes of management, then surely it's not predicting. That's just what they're doing. And surely that would be information that's useful to investors and analysts to understand, well, what is your time frame of what you think the funding piece is? And then secondly, I really don't see, if it's so critical, how you could not have some form of conclusion about the adequacy or your ability to continue in business. Because you've already got something in IS1 about going concern, so if you've got any concerns, you've got to have something flagged there. So you don't want to duplicate it, but I don't see how you could ignore it in this piece. And certainly in our country, you also have a separate, distinct director's declaration about ability to meet future commitments. And I'd be very surprised if you didn't have that somewhere else. So in most other countries, maybe I'm wrong. And if that is the case, then I think it would be strange not to have something here or to have it excluded because you think it's a prediction of future cash flows.
Are there any, does that generate any responses from the preparers in the room. Conclusion on funding for future cash flows.
I had another question for Chris, but not on this point, on the culture point. But
Lisa and then Mark.
Just a quick one on the statement point. And because it came through earlier this morning from a lot of the European participants that a lot of the developed markets seem to have requirements for directors to do additional stuff that is really helpful. I find that in very few emerging markets. And IFRS is not just a European statement, it really is a global one. So I think it would be tremendously helpful to users of financial statements in emerging markets where it's not a local requirement to see some of that come through in IFRS management commentary.
I just wanted to react and this question to Chris because I was struggling a bit with understanding the kind of how you make a materiality assessment of culture, to be honest. So could you maybe give me an example of an organization where culture would not be material, because to help my understanding?
So it might not be the most material thing about your strategy, because it might be that it's already in place and it's there and it's operating and it's just not part of the things that you need to focus on a go-forward basis. Because a lot of these things are cyclical. Like, you know, companies have been in business for years and culture's just suddenly popped out as being this critical thing that we have to think about, which I think is fine at this point, but these things are cyclical. In 5 years' time, we won't be talking about culture, it'll be something else. And so that's all I was trying to... You know, there's some things that are just a bedrock. Are you really going to comment on that every single time? It sort of comes back to, again, I kind of feel like there's a static piece of your policies and your framework that's not going to change very much for some entities. This should be...
But these things are things that you normally in a company monitor from year to year, right? So I can see that you do a global people survey or whatever every year and just ask a number of questions in order just to measure the temperature and say, you know, are we actually going up or down in terms of employee engagement, in allowing people to speak freely about issues that they have a concern about or whatever. So by saying just leaving it out, right, because we think we're in a steady state, I find that quite tricky. But it's not here to debate the issue, but I was just wondering whether materiality considerations would come into this element in my mind.
So you wouldn't restate purpose every year then as well, and down to that framework?
No.
Only when it changes?
Yeah, you'd focus on what has changed. So it's somewhere, it has to be somewhere, but if it hasn't changed, then I would have thought what's more of interest is what are the things that really have impacted how you're going to actually achieve it.
Not entirely certain that works for me. Like you say, you can take a pulse of it, and I mean, there's questions as to can you measure it or not, although there's that thing that this is the important place for the stuff which is hard to measure. So there's got to be a place for some stuff which you can't verify, but that the management team thinks it's important. Maybe that can appear elsewhere. I don't think culture will go away. I don't think it ever wasn't. Our articulation of it is maybe changing, but at least articulated by employee engagement, say, is just one particular measure of that. I don't think that's ever gone away or not. Whether management teams really want to disclose that or not is another sort of matter, and what they're doing within that. And increasingly, we've seen, because of businesses either failing or doing well because of their cultures, investors, at least of this sort, are more interested. And even on the fixed income side, although I don't know whether it gets revealed, the bad culture aspect, making businesses go bankrupt, suddenly actually this is one aspect that even the bondholders have some interest in, it because it can be such an existential risk if it goes badly. Although, to Gary's point, a lot of that is set from tone from the top, which if you start to hear go so, yeah, I would say it is still, I think it's always material.
Well, I think that's a useful discussion to have, and that's probably a useful question to be asking. Is this the one thing that absolutely has to be, like, relationships and resources actually discussed every single time? I'd still come back to, I don't think it fits necessarily under purpose all the time. I'm seeing people say, no, it's actually, it's resources. It's all about people and how they interact. So again, I think it's...
Yeah, it's possibly all about people.
...and how it fits. If you're gonna make a statement that this is the one thing, not one thing, but something that has to be in every single person's management commentary, then I think it has to be enough flexibility about how it's brought in.
Nick?
Just want to come back and not exactly where it fits into the document, but the sense of the document, whether it is just about change in that reporting period. And I think one thing that I have observed, partly as mandates have been managed increasingly on a global business, is that if you're starting to research a company, you obviously want to go to the reporting accounts as your first source document. And it's not just about change. It's not that I'm following this company year after year after year.
Yeah.
This is kind of my starting reference point. And there I do want to hear more about the overall business model, the culture, rather than just the delta. I think the delta is important,
yeah.
But I'm looking for more.
And then what happens in year two?
I'm happy for it to be there in year two as well, because actually year two I may be going to a different...
I think, you know, at the end of the day, users are the most important ones. And so I think we had some of that conversation before about whether or not the... Who was it, Massimo? I think someone talked about the strategy, the document being a standalone document when you can cross-reference. Mm-hmm. So
it may be another way of
So I think we're all talking the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I would think we re-snap the line in the annual document,
mm-hmm.
and then in the quarter you would look to deltas. I mean, when we talk to IR, when we look to our analysts, I mean, when they look at the quarterly documents, they're only cared about the delta between that and when you last snapped the line, which was the annual.
Yeah.
And everything else doesn't matter. They're just looking for that delta. And I think, you know, that's also the SEC's initiative to simplify accounting. I mean, we wrote a letter and basically said, you know, you should just focus on the deltas between the last time you reported. And obviously then re-snap the line at the K. But, you know, I think that's what we find our investors are really focused on.
Was that wider point about coherence? Because you check the quarters off that annual.
Yeah.
So if it's massively changed, we go, well, what happened there? But then to your point, I mean, people who follow companies a long time often go, oh, you know, we have got some of the things. But then people who are new to companies find that, that annual snap quite useful to go, okay, coming into it fresh. So there is that on the different user thing. So, you know, that's a kind of interesting thing about, and now even, you know, how some companies report is they have a kind of more static piece on their website articulating things like the purpose of things, which don't change so much, so that you can snap to that and then flick to the quarterly or the more recent statement. And sometimes that's done with your annual kind of investor day as well. You know, that's the permanent marker that you can go back to the last time you said something about these. So there are different elements of that, at least in practice.
And maybe I think that's perhaps something that needs to come out, Matt, that what is the objective? Is it really just to give a snapshot, or is it to focus on change? Is it both? I think we heard some comments about what's really important is understanding where you have changed the strategy and that you can't sort of bury the change. So it might be that you just need to tease that out a little bit more for the reasons that Nick was talking about, is that there's a piece that is actually a snapshot of what you do, and then the rest is focus and make it clear where it's a change or something's happened during that year.
And possibly that would be a more of a principle for the management commentary as a whole rather than specific to...
Not specific to this. I think it's across the whole thing.
Yeah.
Maybe it's that coherence piece.
Chad, did you want to make a comment? Chad?
Hi. I don't think I did. I mean, I kind of agree with the comments that Nick was making as well around the fact that some of these pieces of information off, you know, fundamental standing data that you want to have in the accounts, but although clearly teasing out changes from period to period. And I'm sorry, I wasn't here for the whole time, but I've got to say I really do like the breakdown of the strategy between the the component parts of purpose, objective, and plan, and teasing them through with certain things being lifted out in a bit more detail tactically. So, I mean, generally speaking, I'm in line with these, and I think nothing is useful in these accounts if it's all just narrative description. I think everything is measurable, and I'd be very surprised if there are how many organizations out there where culture isn't material, where they don't do some objective measure, whether it's a survey of their employees or, you know, to the extent that you can read customer satisfaction into the quality of the culture of the organization and the staff that are interacting with customers. All of these things can be drawn together and tracked period on period. So I'd say there's always the ability to have useful disclosure for users.
Asking.
Marek, did you want to come in, or are you happy as you are?
Yeah, I'm very happy. Sorry, I missed a part of it. But only about 10, 15 minutes. My comments really, the conversation on culture has been quite interesting too, and maybe just touch on that briefly in a second. My comments are more general, and I think even before I came into this conversation today, my reaction was that the guidance that's being developed here has lots of different criteria for what is relevant. At least those criteria seem to be expressed in very different ways in different aspects of the business model risks and so on. And you know, some of those include things like, you know, depended on for the success, whatever success then means, because we would need to understand that. Some of it is about could impact prospects for cash flows. Sometimes it does impact, so in relation to the impact area, it's not impact, not could impact. I don't know whether that's intentional or not and why, but in any case, all of those different ways of phrasing these things are really just different ways of saying this is what is relevant, i.e. that this is what is of interest to users. But they're all proxies for that, because I guess we don't absolutely know exactly what is. And in fact, they're not very specific, because in any individual entity, you've also got to decide using those criteria as a sort of broad benchmark. You've got to decide what in fact is relevant, and then try and provide material information about it. So I think it's quite a difficult one from an auditability point of view. I don't know if it's possible to reconcile some of those different benchmarks. Do they all need to be different? Is there a real reason for it? How do those actually gel with what users would describe as important? You know, could something be done to at least limit the number of different ones and then to explain their meanings? So I took a lot from the conversation earlier about prospects for future cash flows. That's extremely difficult unless you have a very clear idea over what timescale or timescales that impact is going to apply. It makes a big difference whether you have could impact before it or does impact before it. And it also makes a big difference as to how indirect the route is that you take into account in deciding whether or not it could impact. So it seems to me there's a lot of stuff there that makes it not very verifiable, not very easily verifiable, and there'll be a lot of subjectivity in making those judgments. So I think from an auditability point of view, which is what I'm primarily trying to comment on, I think that, you know, this poses quite a lot of challenges, frankly. I found the conversation interesting, and I think some of the comments will help drive it in different direction, perhaps a little bit. In terms of the conversation on culture, there were a few things I reflected on there. The conversation about whether it's about change or not, it seems to me that that's actually a decision that's relatively, it's not very judgmental. It's a question of what you want to present. Are you presenting for some of these things, the policy, the intent, the objective? Are you trying to decide a decision, for example, with culture? I think of culture as a characteristic of the human resources and their management and their interactions with other stakeholders. So to my mind, that's a characteristic of the human resources in the entity.
His last name, right. So
that's a way of addressing that, is to say, you know, we do want you to explain not just what your policy is for those values, attitudes and behaviours, but, you know, how, what is the standing of that culture, if we call it that, at any point in time, and how's it changed over the period of time since you last reported? Those are three different things, and I think we have to be clear which of those things we want to hear about. Measuring the condition of something actually is quite difficult sometimes, and maybe you don't always need that, but you might want to still know the policy and the way in which it's being managed. So I don't know whether that's the case for culture, but I don't know whether it's that easy to measure culture yet. And maybe that will come with time. But those are my general thoughts on the discussion. And really, I do reflect that there's quite a lot of subject.
So you just got cut off at the end.
But it sounded, it looked very wise, wasn't it? Yeah. Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of this session. You're entitled to a break, but shall we just move on? What do you think? We can take a 15-minute break.
Move on.
Any takers?
Five?
Okay, 5 minutes and then...
Washroom? Okay. Yeah, I can do a quick race for the washroom.
I don't know, I'll drop five
because we'd spend at least 1 minute debating it.
It's about 3 hours.
It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3 hours. It's about 3